Real conversation, real connection. It's Real Life with John Cowan on Newstalk ZB.
Welcome to Real Life. I'm John Cowan. My guest tonight is journalist and author Anthony Lowenstein, and he's produced a raft of books and articles and columns and TV programs on all sorts of topics, such as the war on drugs and corrupt exploitation of disasters. And he's just been touring around New Zealand promoting his latest book called The Palestine Laboratory. Welcome, Anthony.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope the New Zealanders have been looking after you well.
They've been very kind and embracing, yes.
So you're visiting New Zealand from?
Sydney, Australia.
Okay, and that's your home base?
Home base.
I've been looking through where you've been. You've lived all over the world. Well, been all over the world.
I have. I've been living in Sydney for most of the last 20 years. However, I was living in South Sudan in 2015, in Palestine between 2016 and 2020, and visiting to work in Honduras and Afghanistan, lots of places.
Lots of places that most people would want to avoid.
I wasn't going there mostly for holiday. I was going there to do researching books or films I kind of like to be a journalist who, I guess, causes trouble, but for the right reasons.
Likes to cause trouble. Well, I can imagine this latest book will, because you're having a tilt at Israel. And if you want to cause trouble, that's a good way to start, isn't it? If you say anything against Israel, people automatically assume that you're anti-Semitic.
Some people.
Yeah, some people.
Not all people. Some people. Yes.
But you're proudly Jewish.
I am proudly Jewish. I'm not religious. I grew up in a non-religious, a secular home in Melbourne, Australia. And, we went to synagogue and celebrated the Sabbath, but I wasn't a religious person. I didn't go to a religious school. But I, as years went on, became very disillusioned with Israel. Now, obviously, that's not the same as Judaism. It's different. However,
But it's interesting because I've met with Jewish people that say Israel is very much central to their concept of being a Jew and following Judaism.
For many Jews, it is. And that's obviously been the case for 75 years. Israel just turned 75 years old. But I would argue that Zionism and Judaism are not the same thing. Historically, Zionism didn't exist before the late 1800s in Europe.
So just fill in a definition there. What do you mean by Zionism?
So Zionism basically is the belief in the right of Jews to a state, to an entity that protects them and gives them rights. And before the Second World War, Zionism was relatively a fringe movement.
Yeah.
After the Second World War, the Holocaust, a lot of Jews around the world felt that the only way that they could be safe was in a Jewish state. And that was essentially the whole belief of Zionism in the first place, that Herzl, the founder of Zionism, and many other Zionist leaders said that we can never be secure in Europe. There's always going to be anti-Semitism. There's always going to be some pockets of people who don't like us. We need to essentially find our own homeland. Now, obviously, it ended up being in Palestine, but early Zionists looked around the world and lots of other places and parts of Australia and South America. It sounds crazy to think of that now, but it ended up being in Palestine. And after the Second World War, there was obviously a global resurgence, sympathy for understandable reasons. And Israel was formed 3 years later in 1948.
Okay. As well as just looking for a patch of ground. Palestine appealed because of the historical and biblical connection with the Jewish nation. That is pretty much front and center of a lot of reasoning of Jewish people, isn't it? It's not just convenient that that was a patch of ground they could grab. It was it was actually, they would claim that to have a moral right to that property.
Well, many Jews then and now use the Bible as their justification, which I think is rather problematic definitely in the 21st century. But there's no doubt there was a Jewish connection to that land for millennia. There have been Jews there in some form for a long time. However, it's a very important however.
However.
There is a big however, because in 1948, when Israel was founded, and this is based on historical record and many Israeli historians, Palestinian historians, there was ethnic cleansing to create Israel. 750,000 Palestinians were forcibly removed in 1948, to create the State of Israel. And that, I would argue, a country born in sin, and I say that similarly about many other similar settler states, my country, New Zealand. The states exist. I'm not saying they, inverted commas, shouldn't exist, but they exist. But the original sin of Israel being created in 1948 caused, to this day, a mass refugee Palestinian issue, which is unresolved.
Okay, now this is coming back to the nub of this latest book, The Palestine
Laboratory.
Yes. So what's your thesis of your book?
The thesis in short is that Israel's been occupying Palestinian territory arguably since 1948, but especially since 1967. Mm-hmm. And in those years, Israel's developed many tools and technologies to maintain that occupation. So anything in the modern age, spyware, drones, facial recognition technology, a range of things. And to maintain that occupation, and for those who don't know, the occupation is having lived in Palestine for a long time and visiting there for 20 years. It's a brutal daily grind. Palestinians don't have freedom of movement. They can't go A to B. They often haven't got A. They're essentially a second-class citizens. But those tools and technologies that Israel has used to maintain that occupation is now a massive export business to many other nations that want to use similar tools to repress their own people. So what I discovered in the book, in the writing of the book, was that there are now roughly 130 countries, so the majority in the world, of countries that have bought some form of Israeli so-called defense equipment, but many of them are repressive states. Saudi Arabia, UAE, Rwanda, India today. And those tools are being used to repress their own people. So what essentially I'm showing is that the occupation of Palestine is not staying there. It's being exported around the world. And that, to me, as a Jew, I mean, I'm a human being first and a Jew second, but is a profound moral failing. That the only way, the legacy to me of the Jewish people in the 21st century could not, should not be, but frankly is, a Jewish state that proudly discriminates against non-Jews to the point where the current Israeli government has members of the Knesset, the parliament, that advocates, supports pogroms. It's not my opinion. That's what they're actually supporting against Palestinians.
Right.
And that is a bit of a problem.
Okay. Now, there's a couple of different streams there. First of all, the oppression of Palestinians within by Israel. But this idea of selling stuff to other countries, if I sell paper to someone and they use that paper to write hate letters, am I morally responsible for that? They're just selling stuff that they've happened to make. Are they therefore in some way tainted by how these authoritarian and autocratic regimes around the world use their equipment?
Many other states obviously sell weapons. I mean, America is the world's biggest arms dealer. Russia does. Britain and France do. Israel's not the only nation that sells weapons, as I talk about in the book. The difference is that Israel has on its doorstep an occupied Palestinian population that they test and trial weapons on. Palestinians become guinea pigs. And there's massive amounts of evidence. It's not an opinion that that's essentially how these weapons are tested. And then they're sold as battle tested. That's an appeal to many nations. So, yes, you could sell paper to China or to America and someone could write something naughty against you or someone else.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as selling spyware to a repressive state or a weapon or a missile or a drone, I would suggest. And I think that the arms industry is inherently amoral. I know it exists. It's the arguably biggest industry in the world. After the illicit drug trade.
About $1 trillion or something, isn't it?
More than that every year. It's surging.
Yeah.
But the idea that the Jewish state does that in some kind of moral way, as they claim that they do, arguably taints all Jewish people, in my view, and all peoples of the world.
Okay. It's interesting that you mentioned that 130 of those nations are customers. Some of those nations don't even like Israel.
Many of them don't like Israel or don't like Jewish people.
Yeah. I mean, the other Arab nations around Israel who have not been the best of neighbours over the years, they're some of the best customers.
Well, indeed. And it's interesting how in the last years, so many of those Arab states, UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Morocco, they are massive purchasers of Israeli repressive technology to repress their own people. So when Israel claims, in my view, wrongly, we're the only democracy in the Middle East. Firstly, you're only a democracy for Jews if you're a Palestinian. It's a military dictatorship. And secondly, if you're exporting repressive technology to your neighbours, you can't really claim the moral high ground.
Okay. I sometimes wonder if those other nations needed Israel to teach them anything about repression. But you still think that this is...
Well, Saudi is pretty repressive on its own. That's obviously right, that's true. I mean, yeah. However, but Saudi and UAE are using very sophisticated, particularly Israeli spyware to go after dissidents, human rights workers, activists. Now, could they find that somewhere else? Probably. But they're not.
Mm.
They are using Israeli technology. Why? Because it's been battle-tested on Palestinians.
Right. Okay. Now, this probably wouldn't have attracted your ire if you were already fired up about the Israeli occupation of Palestine. When you say that this equipment is tested on the on the Palestinians, what are the Israelis actually using and doing to the Palestinians with this technology?
So some of these tools and technologies aren't necessarily deadly, but it might be training AI to manage facial recognition when Palestinians go in and out of checkpoints. It might be gathering biometric data without their consent in certain towns like Hebron, occupied Hebron, to document every single Palestinian person, man, woman and child. It might be testing drones either in Gaza or Israel or Palestine proper. It might be testing some kind of guns or other kinds of weapons. And these companies, and I have lots of details of this in the book, are then marketing it and advertising it as battle-tested. Now, obviously, the US used Iraq and Afghanistan after 9/11 also as a testing ground. They often advertise weapons as battle-tested. In fact, right now, the Americans are battle-testing many weapons in Ukraine in the Russian invasion of that country to assist, so they claim, the Ukrainian resistance to that. So battle testing happens in many war zones. It's not unique to Israel and Palestine. But again, the difference is that Israel has a ready-made occupied Palestinian population. Okay. It's the longest occupation in modern times.
If you've just tuned in, my guest tonight is author and journalist Anthony Lowenstein. As you can hear, he is not scared to poke a hornet's nest. I can't think of any topic that evokes more emotive response than the topic of Israel. We'll talk a bit about why that is after this break. This is Real Life. I'm John Cowan, talking to Anthony Lowenstein. Back with you in just a minute.
Missed a week of Real Life with John Cowan? Follow the podcast on iHeartRadio or listen back at reallife.nz.
Exercise can often take a back seat during the winter months. If so, then Pendulum's Metabolic Daily might be what you're looking for. This unique probiotic contains five live strains, which together work to support the breakdown of sugar and carbohydrates for a normal, healthy metabolism. Start your day with Pendulum's Metabolic Daily, available exclusively at pendulumlife.co.nz. That's pendulumlife.co.nz. Always read the label and follow directions. Matakana Health, Auckland.
Hi, I'm Rick. A few years ago, I made the mistake of buying a puppy for my kids without getting pet insurance. On a walk to the beach, the puppy suddenly chased a bird across the road and was hit by a car. I'll never forget that $6,000 vet bill. Don't be lazy like me. Make sure you get affordable pet insurance today. Phone Pet Insure on 0800 367 444.
Phone Pet Insure 0800 367 444.
Car struggling to start? AA Battery are a mobile service, so they come to you, which is perfect if your car won't go anywhere. Their qualified technicians will install the right battery for your vehicle, and they can even recycle your old battery. Plus, all AA batteries come with a nationwide roadside warranty. So, if your car sounds like it's struggling to start, get in touch with AA Battery Service. Call 0800 500 222 or star 222 from your mobile.
Where the newsmakers meet their match. It's Heather Duplessy-Allen Drive.
Now, the government wants to invest in a combat-capable defence force. Andrew Little is the Minister for Defence. Do you seriously think we're going to have to fight?
Well, we may be called upon by our partners to support them.
Have you heard from China yet?
It's up to them to decide how they want to do. We've got to make our own decisions for our defence and our national security.
Heather Duplessy-Allen Drive with One New Zealand. Back Monday at 4, only on Newstalk ZB. Intelligent interviews with interesting people. It's Real Life on Newstalk ZB.
How I wish you were here. We're just two lost souls swimming in a fishbowl year after year.
Welcome back to Real Life. I'm talking to Anthony Lowenstein, who's picked some music for us. What are we listening to?
That was Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd, which was the first album I loved in decades ago, came out in the mid-70s, and there's something about that line in that song, which is we're all lost souls swimming in a fishbowl. There's something quite powerful about that song, which obviously is written about Britain in the 70s, mm-hmm. but actually I see a lot of Pink Floyd's work, and actually a lot of work of Roger Waters today, as looking at dystopian reality, surveillance technology, all this kind of stuff. And Roger Waters, as some listeners will be aware, is a very strong advocate of Palestine, controversially so.
Now, Palestine isn't the only thing that you are concentrated on. You've got, you're a journalist, but you're unashamedly a person with a campaign in mind. Your journalism is polemic. It's wanting to nudge people's opinions around certain ideas.
I think people need to be poked and prodded, mm-hmm. hopefully in a way that doesn't make them, in a way that makes them, on a range of issues, whether it's the war on drugs, whether it's on Palestine, whether it's on, I've done a lot of work on disaster capitalism, people making money for misery, the war in Afghanistan. To me, the best journalism should make people hopefully informed, but also mm-hmm. uncomfortable.
Yeah. Now, you've got a good sharp stick, you've got a well-honed journalistic ability, and you give give people a prod with them.
Yeah.
Sometimes people get moved in the direction you're wanting to go. Very often, though, people will turn back and snap at you.
A lot of
snapping. That must be very uncomfortable.
On some issues more than others, on Israel-Palestine, as someone who writes critically about Israeli occupation, you have got a definitely, I think, increasingly less vocal, but a pushback by a number of Jewish people who regard what I say as inappropriate, offensive, not understanding, apparently, Israel's defence needs, whatever the reason may be. I've received hate mail and death threats over the years. It's kind of becomes par for the course. But
strike me as being a particularly neurotic, anxious, paranoid person. But
no.
I don't know how I would handle getting death threats and attacks like that. What do you put around your head and heart to defend yourself from that type of thing?
Well, I guess there's a few ways to answer that. When I started getting those attacks, it was quite a long time ago. So you're forced to grow a thicker skin. I don't love getting hate mail or death threats, just to be very clear. But to be honest, if you write certain kinds of things or you make films, if you don't get an angry response in some ways, I would argue you're not doing your job. Now, obviously, it depends on the issue, but I don't mean just for the sake of making people angry. That's not what I mean. I mean that there are certain issues that people need to be challenged about.
The ripples to show that your stones landed in the pond, yeah.
Yeah, and I think for example, I have argued for a long time that the Jewish community in general, your country, Australia, mine, the US, and much of the Western world are complicit in what's happening in Palestine. Mm. It doesn't mean every single Jewish person, of course, is. I mean that a Jewish establishment and an Israel lobby have spent decades and decades saying to the world, Israel right or wrong, saying to politicians and the media, we support Israel. And then I say, but what exactly are you supporting there? You're supporting over decades and decades a brutal occupation of Palestinians in the name of Jews. And now in the 21st century, when virtually every single human rights organization in the world has said that what Israel is performing is apartheid against Palestine. That's not my word. That's the word of every single Israeli Jewish human rights organization, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch. They're saying it's apartheid, not just in Palestine, but Israel itself.
We'll come back to this. I'm just wanting to focus on yourself and about how you handle these sorts of things. You talk about Israel being masters of manufacturing the surveillance equipment. Do you think you yourself are being surveilled? Are you on some list at Mossad? Are you?
I don't know if my dear friends at Mossad have me on a list, but I operate under the presumption that I'm probably being surveilled by someone.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
Someone. All right.
Well, someone or some entity. Obviously, yes, which could potentially include my own state.
Okay. So. Has that ever translated into any real world consequences for you? Have you ever been stopped at borders because of your reputation, or have you been pulled aside because you are known?
I haven't been stopped at borders, but what happens when I go to Israel, I haven't been there for a few years now because of COVID, but that I, years ago, was nearly kicked out of the country when I was living there. It sounds crazy. People can Google this if they're interested, but essentially I was asking literally a critical question of a politician.
Mm-hmm.
In Jerusalem, as a politician who ended up becoming prime minister, and essentially the question was along the lines of, do you not worry that in years to come you and many other Israeli politicians will be treated globally like apartheid South African politicians were, namely pariahs. It's a legitimate, provocative question, I admit. And by the end of the day, there were stories in the Israeli press saying apparently my press pass was going to be cancelled and I was going to be kicked out of the country. I mean, it was a question at a press conference. We got ended up resolving that. But whenever I go in and out of Israel, there's often, shall we say, challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel increasingly does not let in people who are major critics, Jewish or non-Jewish. So the idea that a Jewish state, by the way, and for those who don't know, I can go to Israel tomorrow, or any Jew can, and if you can prove, inverted commas, that you're Jewish, you can be a citizen within 3 months, two, 3 months.
Mm.
And a Palestinian does not have that same right. Who has
even if they have lived there all their life.
They have not got that same right.
Yeah.
And that to me is just by definition amoral, but also racist. I think a lot of people in the 21st century still feel uncomfortable, talking about maybe non-Jews, saying that Jews can be racist. Muslims, any peoples can be racist. And if there is a decades-long occupation against Palestinians, it is based on an ideology of Jewish supremacy. I mean, the Israeli government says that.
Okay. Do you think that Jews, either in the diaspora or back in Israel, are actually swinging around in their thinking about this?
There is a shift. I've been in New Zealand now, and I obviously can speak a bit less about here, but I know that it is happening here slowly. I know the number of New Zealand Jews, Australian Jews, and particularly American Jews, where obviously America is the country arguably that matters the most. There's a Jewish insurgency, I would call it, of sorts, against the Jewish within the Jewish community.
Is that the right word to use?
I call it that. Absolutely, it's a really strong. It's mostly a generational divide between young and older Jews, and younger Jews are building their own organizations and challenging their elders and basically saying, you have lied to us for decades that we have to apparently as Jews support Israel right or wrong, despite the fact that's occupying Palestinians. And that is happening within the Jewish community. This a few years ago, there's a poll that I quote in my book that one quarter of American Jews polled said that Israel was an apartheid state. That's Jews saying that. Now, obviously, many Jews still support Israel. I'm not denying that. But there is a shift, and it's pretty hard for Israel to sell itself when you have ministers in the government openly advocating ethnic cleansing. That's a bit of a PR problem and a moral problem.
Now, if I was sitting in Israel as a Jewish person, and even if I find the occupation distasteful and these calls for pogroms obscene, I would have to say, hang on, we've been attacked since our inception. I think Israel's fought 8 wars, if you count the poor ones against Hamas. If we just rolled over and says, no, we want to be friends with everyone, we wouldn't exist in a week. The Arab world doesn't want us here. We'd be excised. We'd be exterminated. Well, isn't that an argument?
Well, it's an argument. I think it's nonsense, but it's an argument, yes.
But surely they weren't throwing donuts at the
No, there have been.
The
look,
there's, war, were they? They
there
were.
Is some in the Arab world who don't like Israel. I don't deny that. The book talks about that. I'm not denying that. However, a few things briefly. Much of the Arab world now, the Arab leaders, are in bed with Israel. That has shifted. The Arab people might be a different story. They're not particularly fond of Israel. And secondly, in that reasoning, Israel can occupy Palestinians for another 100 years. We have no choice. We have to do this. What can we do? I mean, Gideon Levy, who's a great Israeli Jewish journalist who writes for Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, and is a friend of mine, often says Israel's the only country that he knows that occupies another nation and wants sympathy as an occupier. In other words, we're not supposed to be sympathetic for Palestinians who are occupied, but we're supposed to be sympathetic for a nation that brutalized another people. Now, there are legitimate security needs for Jews. I'm not denying that. In fact, one of the things I talk about a lot, not so much in the book but in general, is anti-Semitism is real. I don't deny that. Real anti-Semitism, attacks against Jews, etc. But if Israel keeps on behaving as it does, it undeniably worsens that anti-Semitism. And you can't fight anti-Semitism if, as an advocate of Israel, you say Israel and Judaism and Zionism are the same thing. They're not.
Okay. In your books, programs, columns, you're against some things. What are you for? What is your ideal for the world? What are you
For the world,
Well, you know, because you're global in your view.
I would.
Is there a label?
There's no label, but I would probably call myself a socialist. I would call myself someone who advocates generally open borders, which I know is not that popular in many circles. I would advocate someone the idea of non-religious states. Mm-hmm. I'm against ethno-nationalism, which therefore means I'm
That's against.
No, it's against. No, but yes, but so many states are for that,
yes.
Including India.
Right.
I believe in true representative democracy. I believe in the rights of children to live happy, free lives without state intrusion. Mm. I see myself, I guess, as a socialist.
Right.
But as someone who, what do you call it, like a socialist with realism. I'm not a utopian.
No.
I don't believe that there's never a right to defend oneself. I'm not a pacifist. I don't believe that. But I think that's – and I'm also an anti-militarist, and that's against something. But it's also – I think if we fight against certain kinds of extreme militarism, which is rampant –
it defines what you're positive for, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anthony, it's been wonderful talking to you. And I'd urge people to get hold of Anthony's book if you're wanting to be provoked and prodded and to disagree with something or – fiercely agree with something or have your mind changed. The book is called again?
The Palestine Laboratory.
And probably the best place to track it down would be online.
Any great bookshop, great online, bookshops. Yep. Buy 10 copies. Christmas is coming.
Anthony, we hope we see you back here in New Zealand, but introduce us to some music before you go.
So the last song is Skinny Love by Bon Iver. He's a great American artist, and this song has always been one that has often been played at moments of stress, but also times of beauty.
Fantastic. It's been great having you on the show. I'm John Cowan, looking forward to being back with you again next Sunday night.
Real Life, made with help from New Zealand On Air.